Why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-choice person, that is our question this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you've got good reasons to be pro-choice and you'd like to share them, 888-318-7884. I have to tell you, your interlocutor, when you call to tell us why you are pro-choice, is a very capable defender of the pro-life position. And so you will be measuring yourself against one of the best, Trent Horn, whose book, Persuasive Pro-Life, is very, very helpful for pro-life people in helping all those of us who want to understand what the arguments are in defense of innocent human life and how to make those arguments, and also how to be a human person to other people while you're doing it. The number 888-318-7884. Welcome back, Trent. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Si.
Does this... I think sometimes pro-choice people test you a little bit. Like you got to work hard. You sometimes look tired after these 2 hours.
Well, it's an important moral issue, and it's not merely an academic issue. There are some debates, you know, if we were debating whether abstract objects really exist, which is a debate among the Platonists and the anti-Platonists. You know, are the numbers 1 and 2, are they just conventional naming tools? Or do they refer to things that exist timelessly and all that? And, you know, so that would be a purely academic question. I don't know anybody that's got into fist fights over abstract objects.
Or they probably did back in the olden days.
That's true. Back in the olden days.
Man,
I mean,
they'd fight over philosophy.
Augustine says that there were riots in the streets over Jerome's translation of the Book of Jonah, that he got the word gourd wrong or something like that. And people rioted in the streets because, you know, 1600 years ago took a lot less to set people off, I guess. So maybe. But nowadays, you know, you have academic, even then, though, you have academic debates. All right.
Right.
This has academic issues about personhood, ethics, law, things like that. But it also has very deep moral consequences for people. If pro-choice advocates are right, then people like you and I are really, really bad. We are misogynists. We mistreat women. We accuse them of a crime they haven't committed, that many of them who've had abortions are not harmed a human being. We falsely accuse them of that. We take away their rights. If pro-choicers are right, we're doing really wrong things. But if pro-lifers are right, then abortion is on a scale of ending human life that is unheard of in the history of humanity. I mean, there are people who will try. I was reading a Twitter post the other day. There was a priest. It was very sad to see this, actually. It was a priest who said that one of those right to life guys came to me, which is a weird way of talking, because that's like saying you're not a right to life guy.
Yeah.
One of those right to life guys said he wanted crosses out on the parish lawn for babies killed by abortion. And I said, sure, if you also put up crosses for people who die from the death penalty and from illegal immigration. And he's like, that ended the conversation quickly. And I thought that was just a really bizarre thing to say and a strange moral equivalence here, because I would have said in that situation, I wrote in response to him, deal.
Yeah, so I would have done it too. I didn't know if I was wrong about that, but I would have
absolutely done that. So I would have had, six crosses for the children who have died in custody during the migrant crisis, 15 crosses for the people who have been executed in the U.S. in 2019, and 600,000 crosses for the children who have been aborted.
Yeah.
I would have happily put all that there. And so if the pro-life position is right, it's a massive destruction of human life that leaves a toll on the women and men who are involved, who obtain abortions, who perform abortions, who defend it. We have to have a serious conversation about this and get to the truth and not just snipe at each other.
Again, if you'd like to have that conversation and you are a pro-choice person, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We start this hour with Matthew. Matthew, why are you pro-choice?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Hey, guys. It's an absolute honor. So I see why it's rational to draw the line of personhood at conception. Mm-hmm. But I would say that all abortions are wrong, but I make the moral judgment that any woman who was raped should be able to go straight in and get the Plan B pill. Would you guys have any problem with that?
Well, it depends on the circumstances that are involved. The ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare providers allows for the use of emergency contraception to prevent conception caused by sexual assault. So if we can have moral certainty that administering something like Plan B would prevent a rapist's sperm from fertilizing a woman's egg, such as it prevents ovulation, for example, or there's no chance of ovulation occurring, then I would support that. And the ethical and religious directives of Catholic healthcare providers also supports that. However, I would not support killing, and the Catholic Church would not support directly killing a human being in the womb because he or she is a product of rape. That child deserves to be treated with care and should not be harmed because of the circumstances of his or her conception. What do you think of that?
Yeah, okay. So I guess I make the bodily autonomy argument kind of the violinist. And I've actually read your book and I've read the objections. I know you only list three of many more objections in your book.
Sure.
But this situation kind of supersedes those objections. So, you know, instead of the reverse violinist, it is the true Thompson's violinist.
Well, right. Well, it sounds like if you've read my book, you see the responsibility objection really wipes out trying to apply it to most abortions. You're picking the one example that's like, because in the violinist example, through no fault of your own, this violinist is plugged into your body and is needy, needs you. And so you think the only thing that correlates to that is pregnancies that arise from rape, because you also haven't done anything to cause a child to be in need. Would that be right?
Yeah. So if I put myself on an island with my kids and they're plugged into me for survival, but I did that, I would say, yeah, I have an obligation. And as well, I would say the government should hold me to that obligation. But if I wake up one morning on the island and I'm hooked up to my kid
even if you're here on the mainland, I would agree with, for example, this is like what Damien brought up in the previous hour. If it turns out that your own child needed you to donate a kidney or bone marrow, let's say your child was going to die and needed you to donate bone marrow. That's a case where Damien was on a decent point here in the earlier hour, that if you didn't give your child bone marrow to save his or her life, I would consider that morally reprehensible. I would say you were a morally deficient human being, if provided that it was just that giving bone marrow would cause the normal wear and tear and pain associated with bone marrow, not like I'm asking you to die to save your child's life. I would say that it's wrong, but that the law can't compel you to donate an organ to save anyone else's life, even your own child. But I really do think that abortion is different. It's more like the example of a woman being snowed in and with her infant, and the only way to keep the infant alive is by breastfeeding him or her. Now there, and I could even change the story a little bit, so it's more like pregnancy in the case of rape or the violinist. Like if a woman had a child dropped off on her doorstep and the only way to keep the child alive was to breastfeed him or her like an infant, I would say she would have an obligation to that child as well. And I think that carries over to pregnancy. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. And I really appreciate that. I would separate just to make it kind of comes down to a moral judgment, I think. Mm-hmm. I would just say if the woman's been put in that position, the baby dropped on her doorstep, or say she's been kidnapped and put in a house with a baby.
Yeah.
I would say if she runs out of the house at that point, I just don't like the idea of the government forcing her to stay there and, you know, the cost on her body. I think if she did it voluntarily, absolutely. But if she didn't, that's where I would separate from you.
Well, and here's another point I bring up, that in one sense, the relationship between you and the person who stands in need of your body is immaterial. In one sense, you can't be compelled to donate a kidney to a stranger. You can't be compelled to donate a kidney to your own child. But in another sense, I do believe that parental relationship has some sort of moral weight. For example, I believe that if people have a right to life, rights have corresponding moral duties. Okay, so if I have a right to live, that means, let's say in this case, Cy has a moral duty to not stab me in the heart. See, I didn't kill you that time, Cy.
No, you made me a murderer.
But well, what do you want? You said you didn't want me to kill you.
No, I prefer that. I prefer.
You would rather be a murderer?
Well, no, actually, no. Because that, if you're a murderer, it damages your soul.
Yeah.
But if you're murdered, it just damages
your
body.
Jesus says something about that. Do not fear him who can kill the body.
Right, right.
Kill the body and soul.
All right, so you can go back to killing me.
Yeah. So if Cy has a right to life, that means I have a moral duty to not stab him in the heart. Okay. So I guess, Matthew, to look at children, if we say that a child has a right to life, like let's say a baby, if a baby has a right to life, what's the corresponding moral duty that accompanies that?
Yeah, no, I hear you. That's like it's hard to see around that. I don't know if you've read about like the de facto guardianship ideas around that.
Where are you citing that from? I've heard that. I mean, I know one place that phrase comes from. Where are you citing that from?
I can't remember who wrote it. It might have been Francis Beckwith, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
was from the pro-life side.
Yeah, my friends Josh Brom and Steve Wagner wrote an essay on the de facto guardian, and I didn't know if I entirely agreed with them. We'll have to have a little pro-life symposium to hash that out. But my point is this, and I think this is something we have to go to break here soon, but I think it's something we don't think about a lot in this situation, and that is sometimes with the bodily autonomy arguments, we will say, well, of course, a fetus has a right to life, just like you and I. Of course, of course, of course. But that doesn't entail a right to use another person's body. But to me, though, if we say a fetus has a right to life or an infant has a right to life, the right to life for children encompasses positive moral duties. Like my right to life means Cy and Nick and Marie and everyone else here in the studio just has a moral duty to not kill me. But if they leave me alone, if everybody here at Catholic Answers leaves me alone, they will respect my right to life. But if you leave an infant alone, if you leave a fetus alone, you actually violate their right to life. So when we say like a fetus has a right to life, but they don't have a right to a person's body, the problem is that's the one thing their life depends on. So it's like we say they have a right to life in name only. And I just can't quite buy that. So I hope that gives you some food for thought and some of the other listeners. And I thank you for calling in, Matthew. And thanks for reading my book and for being educated on the topic. It's very open-minded of you.
We, however, have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Trent Horn. And why are you pro-choice? If you're a pro-choice caller, we got a couple on the line, but that means four lines open. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Check out EW10's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Trent Horn is our guest this hour, and as everybody who works with him knows, Trent is a busy man, constantly producing new content or going and giving talks or writing a book, which he does about once every 2 or 3 weeks. And
6 to 8 months.
6 to 8 months, is that really your time?
So, I guess if you average them out, I'd say there's one about every 9 to 12 months or so.
No, oh, okay.
I love writing. It's my favorite thing to do.
The thing I want to know about is you just did a debate on... this is interesting to me. You have your own podcast.
Yes.
You could say whatever you want, but you invite people who disagree with you to come in and then you debate them.
Odd. I like to talk to people who disagree with me. Where would you ever get an idea like that?
I don't know. I'm the guy that you always kill, so I don't want to talk about it. But
you're right. I enjoy doing that. And I think that on my podcast on the Council of Trent at trenthornpodcast.com, I want to go deeper into these issues, deeper than we can here on Catholic Answers Live, whatever the issue may be. Like when we talk to someone on Catholic Answers Live, at most we can have maybe 10, 15 minutes. At most, past 10 minutes are really given the lion's share of radio time. We just don't have that much time. And we could talk about these issues in a very substantive way. So I want to have a format to do that. So on my podcast, I talk about them sometimes solo. I just dive into the issue, or I do open mailbag with my patrons who support the podcast. Also, I like inviting people on who disagree. Like I had Brandon Robertson, who is a local pastor here in San Diego. He's written several books arguing that there is nothing sinful about homosexual behavior and we have to interpret the Bible in a different way. So I had him down here at the studio. He came in and we talked for almost 2 hours. And I released that as a three-part series on my podcast, because then we don't have the constraints of radio. We can just talk and move forward and be free to do that. And I think people learn a lot from seeing these real interactions with people. And that's what I want to do. I have another one scheduled tomorrow, actually, with an atheist on whether it's rational to believe in miracles. So all kinds of stuff, always looking for the best people to come on the show and to have dialogues.
That sounded like a moment of impression of our president.
I can neither confirm nor deny who I might be impersonating, but I want the best people on the show. I want the top 10% of the top 10% of people who criticize the Catholic faith. I could be talking about anybody, but that's...
Now that sounded like Bernie Sanders.
I can neither confirm nor deny who I might be alluding to, but that's who I want. And I think it's on any of these topics. So if you want to see episodes like that, including my interview with Brandon Robertson, what am I slipping here? You can go to Catholic Answers YouTube to watch it as a video, or to my podcast at trenthornpodcast.com. Listen to it as a 3-part audio series.
What are you going to do with when Elizabeth Warren becomes the nominee? You're going to have to come up with an Elizabeth Warren impression.
I don't have impersonations, everybody. I do the best that I with anybody. It doesn't matter if they're politics or not. If it's a terrible impersonation somebody would like, I'm happy to oblige them. I want us to have a really good shoe. Really good shoe. Here at Catholic Answers Live.
Nick doesn't even know who you're doing. I can't
Nick,
believe
do you know
you
who that is? We're going to have a really good shoe.
Really? The Beatles were on his Ed Sullivan. It's Ed Sullivan. Whitney in New Mexico.
Back when TVs were black and white, Nick. You may not have known that.
Whitney is listening to EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You've been very patient, Whitney. Thank you for joining us. Why are you pro-choice?
Well, So here's the thing. I grew up being pro-choice, and then about a year ago, I guess last Easter, I became Catholic. So it's
Amen. Praise be to
something
God.
That I'm struggling with now.
Okay. Fair enough. Sure.
So I'm not pro-abortion, but I'm not necessarily pro-life either. So I always considered myself a pro-choice because I always felt, you know, a woman's body is her choice, like my body is my choice.
Okay.
Now, would I tell somebody to get an abortion if they asked me, you know, then no, I wouldn't. You know, I'd say, you know, well, I would keep it. I would never, you know, tell somebody that. But is that my decision to make for somebody else? No. So I guess, can you see where I'm like kind of struggling with this?
I see where you're struggling a little bit, Whitney. Like, for example, we homeschool our children. But I wouldn't tell other people, hey, you have to homeschool your child. That may not be the best fit for them. But I could tell them, hey, you can't whip your kid with a belt so hard that they're bleeding and left with black and blue bruises and they can barely walk. Like, you can leave parents and people with some latitude in their personal decisions, but there's certain bright lines they just can't cross. And I think hurting children should be one of them that you can't say, even if it's your personal choice, you can't do that if it harms another human being. And so I think that would kind of flow over into the issue of abortion for me. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess my whole thing is morally, I think abortion is wrong. Mm-hmm. I would never do that myself. Mm-hmm. But legally, I guess it's an option. I don't think it shouldn't be an option. I know there, you know, before it was legal, there was a lot of women dying as well as babies. Because they're going to do it no matter what, you know, and it's like...
Well, Whitney, let me jump in on this. There's two issues here, a factual issue and a moral issue. So from a factual perspective, the claims that thousands of women were dying from illegal abortions prior to Roe versus Wade is actually false. Bernard Nathanson, who is an abortion provider who became pro-life, he passed away a few years ago, he said that we made those numbers up in order to facilitate our movement. Mary Calderon, who was the president of Planned Parenthood back in like 1960, said that 90% of illegal abortions are done in doctor's offices. Maybe there were 200 illegal abortion deaths in 1960. In 1972, there were something like 37 deaths from illegal abortion and 25 deaths from legal abortion. But I think that any death from abortion is tragic, whether it's legal or illegal, or it's the mother or the child. But to me, the answer is not making it legal to kill the child. We should protect both. Otherwise, we've got a little less than a million children whose lives are ended every year in our country. So that's the concern I have, is that if this child is a human being, we ought to treat them humanely. Now, let me ask you a question, though, because I understand your concern. Like, yeah, things are bad, but not everything that's bad should be illegal. And I agree with that. But here's my question for you. How bad does something have to be before we need to make it illegal? Like, when do you cross the line that a bad thing becomes so bad it ought to be illegal?
Right, and that's where it's hard. I mean, so yeah. Is there a stance? Because maybe I'm not pro-choice so much as I'm, maybe, hopefully there's a better option.
A better option,
right?
Than what?
Like, I know there was a previous caller talking about the Plan B, and I'm not totally up on that. Although, well, if it's similar to like birth control, where just, you know, I don't agree with people using that as a birth control. But if, like, in the cases of rape and stuff, if that's a better option than just to abortion.
Well, in the case of rape, here's the thing: the Catholic Church teaches that contraception is a sin because every marital act, every sexual act between husband and wife has to be open to life. Just as every sexual act has to be faithful, which is why adultery is always wrong, every act has to be open to life. You don't have to be always aiming to have a child. You just have to be open. You can't sterilize the act with contraception. Now, what the ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare providers, so this is the manual for Catholic hospitals, it says that in the case of rape, when you use something like Plan B, that's not the sin of contraception. That's just preventing the rapist's attack from continuing. So you can use Plan B to keep a rapist's sperm from, you know, from fertilizing a woman's egg. You're just keeping the rape from essentially continuing. But to use it either as a contraceptive or as an abortifacient to end a child's life, that would be killing an innocent human being. It would be a grave matter. So I do appreciate that you are open-minded to this, and I'm very grateful that you've embraced the Catholic faith. What I would like to do is I'd like you to stay on the line. I would like to send you, I'll send you two books. One is my book, Why We're Catholic, which is always a great primer for someone who's new to the faith. And the other one is my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and it has everything I write in there about abortion, and then you could always call back if you have questions about that. But do you have any other thoughts or questions for me that you like to sort out, or anything else?
Well, yeah, it's just basically that. I just, on a political stance, I'm pro-choice, I guess, because for me, it's an out of sight, out of mind. But now, being Catholic, you know, I wonder if that is completely wrong, because, you know, we're supposed to love one another. We're all brothers and sisters.
Right.
So is it like, do I just, you know?
Well, think about it this, Whitney. Jesus said, what you do for the least of my brethren, you do for me. And I would say unborn children are easily the least among us. And so what we do for them is indicative of what we do for Christ. I mean, in the early church, Christians were known and sometimes vilified for rescuing children who had been abandoned in the wilderness. In the ancient world, they had abortion, but it was really safer and easier to just give birth to a child and then leave them in the woods to starve or be eaten by wolves. So in ancient Rome, fathers would just take children who seemed weak or sickly and took them out to the countryside and left them in a dung heap. And then it was Christians who came along and secretly adopted these children and cared for them, even when it was illegal to do so. So for them, if it wasn't out of sight, out of mind, for those first Christians in a culture that approved the killing of human beings because parents believe they have a right to do that, I think it carries over today for Christians who live in a world where the unborn deserve that same protection. So do stay on the line, Whitney. I want to give you a copy of Why We're Catholic and Persuasive Pro-Life. We're going to need your email or contact information for that. And happy to send you those books. I haven't sent any books in these 2 hours. Normally, I'm sending books left and right.
Busy killing people. Whitney,
hypothetically, Si.
Fair enough.
All for the greater good. So,
I guess so. All for the greater good. Whitney, enjoyed talking with you. Will you call again sometime?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Our number here is 888-318-7884. I have to say, pro-lifers, you've been very patient today, and you haven't given Marie the duty of having to let you know we couldn't put you on the air today. Pro-lifers, we've just asked you to hold off. We share your pro-life convictions, and I'm sure that there are many people who had very many helpful things to say. But today, we have reserved for those who are pro-choice. If you are a pro-choice person, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Christian or not, whatever you are and whoever you are, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884 and share with us why you are pro-choice. Our guest is Trent Horn. You can find Trent's podcast at trenthornpodcast.com. He's got a brand new book called Counterfeit Christ, and he's the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, a book that covers the very territory we are covering today. Again, if you're pro-choice and you'd like to share with us why you're pro-choice, 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible as a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers. Why are you pro-choice? One line open right now. Lots of pro-choice folks on the line. So if you are on the line, go ahead and stay on the line. We're going to do our very best to get you in so you can share your reasoning for why you are pro-choice. 888-318-7884 is the number. John in Mobile, Alabama, listening on Archangel Radio, is next. John, why are you pro-choice?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi, John.
Hey, so I'm Catholic, and abortion should never occur. That's one thing I want to say. Now, I'm skeptical on whether making it illegal will actually help in ending abortion, because if it's legal, then abortion clinics exist, and us Catholics and Christians should actually be outside of it and talking to these women that are thinking about getting abortions and doing this. But if it were illegal, then they do it in secret, and there's no way we could actually talk and find them and communicate how it's wrong and how it's bad and it shouldn't be done.
Well, let me address that argument, John. So you're saying, well, if abortion is illegal, we'll have less opportunities to personally engage those who are choosing to have an abortion because it will be clandestine. People will be secretly choosing to do it. I don't think that's a sufficient justification to keep abortion legal for a variety of reasons. Number one, if our goal is to educate people that abortion is wrong, One of the best ways we can do that is by making it illegal, because civil law acts as a teacher. Most people are law-abiding. Most people do not break the law, one, because they don't want punishment, and two, because the law informs them things are wrong, and most people want to choose to do good. Maybe not all the time, but they want to do it at least some of the time, and for important issues. So if it's illegal, that communicates the message abortion is wrong to tons and tons of people. I mean, I've spoken to women who are post-abortive, who got abortions in the late 70s, and they said the reason they did was because, well, it was legal now, so I didn't think there could be anything wrong with it if it turned out that it was legal. So one, I think having it be illegal communicates that really, really strong message to people. Second, well, I guess that might be my main point there. Would you like to elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I think we can still communicate to people that something is wrong without having to make it legal. We do the same thing with robbing banks or committing fraud or doing all other sorts of crimes like that. Oh, here's the other point I wanted to raise. When has it helped to reduce something by making it legal? I mean, making something legal seems to entice more people to do it rather than less. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know about that. We have a lot more people that are hooked on heroin and morphine than when it was legal. So I'm skeptical. I think maybe I just have a worse impression of people. I think that they're more likely to do things that are wrong.
Well, let me.
Perhaps it's better if they just expose that they're willing to do it and we can talk to them rather than sending those evil people into hiding. That way we can never actually talk
to
them.
I think that examples using drugs, those may not be the best examples. I don't know all the statistics or sociology involved with drug laws and how it affects drug use. And with drug laws, whether decriminalization or legality, how it raises or lowers drug use numbers. Let's stick with just actions that harm other innocent human beings. For example, making child labor illegal really does cut down on the amount of children that are sent into coal mines and stuff like that, right?
Well, I disagree with that. I don't think that actually changes that.
Do you think the percentage of children who work in dangerous occupations now versus 100 years ago, do you think it's higher, lower, or the same percent?
I don't think it's because of legality that it changed. I think it changed because jobs just got better. We don't have children working in coal mines because parents are now wealthier and their children don't have to work in coal mines.
Well,
they had to work in coal mines back in the day because everyone was poor and it would do that or starve.
Right, but this seems like a general intuition to me, though, that a law that forbids something and puts a punishment will reduce the number of incidents of engaging in that behavior. That just seems to me to be common sense. Let me give you another example. If tomorrow we repealed the law that says you can't rob banks, do you think taking money out of banks that's not yours would increase? Probably.
Well, it depends. How well armed are those banks? Regardless, yes, more people will try it, of course, without a police force to prevent it, I suppose. But that being said, that's a different degree. I mean, of how to do it. I mean,
well, the law restrains people.
I get what you're saying.
The reason we don't do a lot, like the reason, we do care about other drivers on the road, but usually the reason we don't speed home is because we don't want a ticket, right?
Everyone I know speeds.
But they usually don't do felonious speeding, like 30 or 40 over. My point is, I think that it's clear that when it's illegal, the rates are much lower. And I can't even do that empirically with abortion. For example, Western Europe has lower abortion rates than the United States. And they actually have more restrictive abortion laws than the United States because many of them don't allow for abortion in the third trimester or even the second trimester of pregnancy. And that cuts down on the rates. Michael New is a professor in Alabama who's done a study that shows that laws even requiring parental consent and notification and waiting periods in the U.S., those laws reduce abortion incidents here. So I think if we care about the unborn, we ought to pass laws that will restrict abortion in any way possible, because that will reduce the number of children whose lives are lost. So I think that's reasonable, and I'll leave it up to our listeners to decide between the two views.
John, thank you very, very much for that call. Again, if you are a pro-choice person and you'd like to call, we will probably have time to get you in by the top of the hour. The number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Trent Horn is our guest. I am your host, Cy Kellett. We are both pro-life people. We're not trying to hide that from you, but if you'd like to talk with pro-life people about why you're pro-choice, please give us a call, 888-318-7884. Rocio in Colorado, listening on, or watching on YouTube Live, you are up next. Why are you pro-choice?
Rocio, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
Hi.
It's a Rocio or Rocio?
Rocio.
Rocio.
Yes.
Why are you pro-choice?
Okay, I'm not necessarily pro-choice. Actually, I'm not pro-choice. I'm Catholic, created Catholic, been in Catholic schools, everything. But I work in downtown. Hmm. And whenever I walk in downtown, it just breaks my heart to see all these children that have parents that are drug addicts or alcoholics and mistreat them. And I just cry every day seeing all these pictures. And sometimes I wonder, it's not that I am pro-choice, but I wonder, it wouldn't be better for these kids to be killed in the womb than being killed at 2, 3, 5 years old after so much suffering, because they end up being killed anyways by neglect. They kick them in the, you know, some people just have kids for the food stamps rather than because they really care for the kids. It's more the money they're going to get off the kids. So all these things, and I hate to think that way, but it just breaks my heart to see all these kids being so mistreated by their parents because they care less for the kids. They treat them like just for convenience.
No, and I would understand your sadness and also a righteous anger at someone who would fail in their responsibility to be a mother or father to these children, who would just not care for them, abuse them, exploit them. It breaks my heart and also sets my heart on fire with a righteous anger that justice ought to be done for these children. I hear what you're saying. But the question, wouldn't it be better for these kids, some of whom die 3, 4 years old from neglect, for them to have died in the womb? Well, that kind of question for me is like saying, is it better for a baby to die when they're 6 months old or for them to die when they're 10 years old and they're abused? I can't say one is better than the other, because we shouldn't kill 10-year-olds, we shouldn't kill toddlers or babies, and we shouldn't kill unborn babies. We should just protect all of them. Here's where I'd be concerned, Rocio, with this logic. If we thought, well, it's better for them to die in the womb. The problem is sometimes, I guess you see it, that sometimes kids, you know, they're born into a bad situation, but then things improve. Rocio, isn't it also true that some kids are born in a good situation, and then things turn out bad after they're born? Does that happen sometimes?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, what I do these days is whenever I see something like this, I just pray at the, a rosary, hoping like you just said, that rosary might change their lives somehow.
God,
because it's just
He's powerful to do that, and it's because we have to think about it, like. We might say, well, they're going to have a bad life. Some people start with a bad life and things totally change for them. And it's amazing. And if we had killed them, we would have snuffed out a beautiful life, a beautiful child who could have had a whole life ahead of him or her. But on the other extreme, if you've got someone, some kids are born and it's fine. Their parents are taking care of them. Everything's great. But then when they're 1 or 2 years old, you know, drugs enter the picture, abuse, things fall apart when they're a little baby. We would never say, okay, since things have fallen apart, let's just kill them while they're a little baby when they don't know any better. We would never do that to a born baby. So I would say we shouldn't do that to an unborn baby either. We should protect them, and we should just say, yeah, these situations, they're complex socially. Like, what do we do with drug abuse, with poverty, with neglect, with absent fathers? there's different situations, different solutions people put forward to say, here's what we should do. But, and that's fine. We can disagree about what solution is best. I would just hope we could all agree that some solutions are off the table. Like, we shouldn't kill these children. Let's get it off the table. That's a distraction. Let's focus on the good options, the viable solutions we have to these social ills to protect the dignity of these human beings. So I hope that's helpful for you, and I'm glad you called in.
And Rocio, we'll have to leave it right there. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Why Are You Pro-Choice? With Trent Horn, our guest, right after this.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Next time on EWTN Live, Taufik Bellini shares how the nonprofit In Defense of Christians advocates for religious freedom and protection in the Middle East on the next EWTN Live.
EWTN Live with me, Father Mitch Packwell, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN TV and radio.
Welcome back. Why Are You Pro-Choice? Our topic this hour, our guest, Trent Horn, and up next is Jasmine in Canton, Ohio. Jasmine, why are you pro-choice?
Hi, I'm actually pro-choice because I feel like it, at the end of the day, it should really be somebody's choice. I actually had a child at 13 years old. I'm 20 years old now, and I did not have a choice. I wasn't listened to. Even when I didn't know I was pregnant until later on, but when I had said I wanted to have an adoption, I wasn't listened to on that either. And having grown with that life and then the stigma that comes with being a teen mom and being such a young one, it's rough. And I understand it more so than somebody else because I've lived it, unlike a lot of other people. And there's always that argument, what if she's 11, 12, 13 years old? Well, I was that 13-year-old. And it's not something that I speak of socially, but I see it, I see the argument so much more now. And I see a lot of people use religion, and I know this is a Catholic radio show, and I grew up very religious, went to church three times a week for years. God gave us free will and the power to choose. Even though I'm not religious anymore, I feel like if people are going to use religion to justify or demonize, we should remember that God gave free will. Right. And it says so in the Bible, but
Let me ask you a question. So you're right. God gives us free will in the sense that he doesn't pull our strings like puppets. He lets us choose what to do. We can choose to do good or evil. But if we have free will and we can choose, do you think we should also be held responsible for our choices?
Definitely.
Okay. So we shouldn't use our choices to like hurt other people.
Well,
I think that's simple. Like, you shouldn't use your choice to hurt somebody else, right?
First breath.
Okay.
And I'm not like, oh, go get an abortion at like, you know, your second trimester, but I feel like a strict law where it's like 10 weeks into it, that's in its own way justifiable because you're not far along, and it's not really life yet, and that sounds horrible, but...
Well, Jasmine, I see what you're trying to say here, and first, tell me about your situation. Do you still have custody of your child? Are you still raising your child?
Yes, I raise my child. Mm-hmm. I have her. I'm a single parent. I have, fortunately, my mother's help, mm-hmm. but I know a lot of people aren't that fortunate, and I have struggled every single day. I had to drop out of school, and I'm fortunately now able to go back to school because an opportunity came my way.
I understand the feeling of not wanting to have gotten pregnant at such a young age. But at the same time, like when I look at my two little guys, they're 4 and 2 years old. Like, I couldn't imagine my life without them. Like do you get that feeling when you look at your child?
Yeah, but I also know that if I would have had her now, and let's say tomorrow I went into labor and she was here, mm-hmm. I would have been able to actually be a mother to her, because I was more of a sister or a babysitter to my own child rather than a mom.
But you're a mom now, and it sounds like you're trying to do right by. Do you have a? Did you say a daughter? Her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're trying to do right by your daughter. You're caring for her. You're being a good mom, and that's a good thing. And I just think that we should say that anybody who is a mom or a dad to a child owes that child just the basic dignity they deserve as a human being. I think we both agree with that. And I'm proud to hear that you're doing right by your daughter and you're trying to improve your situation. Like, yeah, sometimes life throws curveballs at us and it doesn't go always as we plan. But we can't always control what happens in life. Or sometimes we make a choice that wasn't a great idea. But we can always choose to go forward and do the right thing. And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
But does it, I frankly feel mad when I hear Jasmine say she was 13 years old and pregnant and no one listened to her. She had a perfectly good solution. She offered to give the child up for adoption and she wasn't listened to. She was a child the time.
Yeah. And I would wonder also where the father is in all this. I would have some stern words for him and the responsibility he owes you and your daughter. But let's go back, though, because I think, Jasmine, it's a little bit bigger than this, because it sounds like you're saying not just people who are 11, 12, or 13, but even if they're like in college or out, they could have abortions maybe up to 10 weeks. I want to make sure I get your thinking clear on this. Why would you draw the line at 10 weeks?
So I'm not sure how well you know the female anatomy, but I've been learning more and more. But... Mm-hmm. So a pregnancy is actually dated from the first day of your last period.
That's called LMP. And so they use that to date pregnancies because you can't know when conception occurs. Yeah, it's the easiest way to do it, but it's not the scientific way to say how far along the baby is. Like a pregnancy at 10 weeks LMP, the baby would be about 8 weeks old.
Or less than.
Yeah, around there.
I actually just went through all the know-how. I actually found out I was pregnant over the summer, and I had a miscarriage.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And actually, having gone through that and the physical excruciating pain of it alone, and I'm not sure if you know this also, but the medical terminology for a miscarriage is called an abortion.
Right. It's called a spontaneous abortion. When you say you went through it alone, did you mean you didn't tell anybody or you had nobody you could talk to about it?
With my first pregnancy?
No, the one over the summer. You said you went through it alone. What did you mean? What do you mean by that? You didn't tell anyone?
The physical pain, like having to deal with the pain myself.
Right. Yeah. They're painful. We've gone through two miscarriages.
It's such a horrible thing, not just for not just for the one person alone, but for the mom, but for the people you shared the news with. Yeah. It's painful altogether.
But here's the thing, Jasmine, I think we would agree what's painful about it is that, you know, there is an excitement about a little life dwelling with inside the mother's body. And then for whatever reason, in a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage, that life is taken from us. And with God, like, he gives life and he takes it. He never promises us a set number of days, however, you know, weeks, months, years, or decades. It can be very long or it can be very short. It's up to him. But the point is that we should, I think we should cherish all of those lives for however long they are. And we shouldn't directly cause the end of those children's lives. And I think that would apply to a baby right after they're born and even before. Because I know you said, well, a baby takes its first breath when it's born. Well, yeah, but that's its first breath through its mouth. For long before that, it's breathing through the umbilical cord. I mean, some people in hospitals today, they breathe with cords going through their neck. It's a tracheotomy because their mouths are damaged. But that doesn't mean they're not people because they breathe a different way. Babies just breathe a different way in the womb. But they're still babies and we should care for them. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense in its own ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I hope that you'll give that some thought. And I appreciate you calling. And I appreciate you thinking this through and trying to do the right thing. It sounds like you're somebody who, even if you're not religious, you try to be a good person and you try to do what's right, not just what other people say is right or what might be easiest for you. You're trying to do the right thing. So what I would like to do, Jasmine, is I'd like to send you my book, Why We're Catholic. And it might give you some stuff to think about, you know, why someone would be Catholic just beyond the Bible says so or the church says so. I think there's good reasons in there. And I'd like to send you that book. So our call screener will get your email and we'll send that to you. And if you ever have a question, you can always look at the show calendar at Catholic.com. And if I'm on, you can always call and ask me about it. And I'd be happy to chat with you. Or you could go to my website at trenthorn.com. And you can send me a question there. I get questions there all the time. But I enjoy talking with you, and I'd like to send you the book, and I hope it's helpful. I'm grateful you called in.
Okay, yeah, but just one more thing, though.
Okay.
I would
sure.
just advise anybody else on this argument to remember that it's not our place to judge or take away somebody's will, and there's always something else going on. Nobody's first thing is, I'm going to get an abortion. It is the last option. It's never anybody's first.
Well, Jasmine, I can't leave it at that because we all make choices. And it sounds like to me you think abortion is the least desirable of the your parenting or adoption. What is it about abortion that makes it like the worst choice?
Because it's never the easiest thing to do. You could want that pregnancy more than anything in the world and then have that baby with you, but no heart, no lungs. You as a mom can't bear to bring something into the world and know that the moment that it's here, it is not going to be with you. It'll be just taken away from you.
Right. And that's a small subset of births of children who have a terminal illness. They'll die shortly after birth. What I would say, though, is that even at born children, there's born children who get into accidents or have diseases and they're going to die, but we care for them. We put them in children's hospice. We ease their suffering. We don't kill them because they're dying. Human beings don't kill each other because we're dying. We care for each other. We have compassion. Compassion means to suffer alongside, co-passio, to suffer with. And what we're called to do for our fellow human beings, our fellow brothers and sisters, is to suffer along with them and help them and not mistreat them, even if it's a very difficult thing to do on our end. We should, as Paul says in Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burden. So stay on the line. Our call screener will get your email. I'll send you Why We're Catholic. You have a question about it, call in, and then maybe the conversation will continue at another point.
Jasmine, God bless you, and thank you so much for that call. I'm very sorry to the pro-choice folks we weren't able to get on. You could probably see why we took a good amount of time with Jasmine. She deserved to have that time. I'm sure you did as well, but you'll have to call next time we do this. Trent Horn, thank you very much. It's a hard-working couple hours, but thank you for what you did.
Glad to have you here, Si.
We will see you tomorrow for a couple hours of open forum. And if you want to know more about Trent, maybe visit trenthornpodcast.com where you can find out all about him and listen to the podcast and maybe become a supporter of the podcast. Also, brand new Trent tracks out right now, 99 cents for the next 24 hours. Just go over to shop.catholic.com and get your Trent tracks for 99 cents. See you tomorrow for Open Forum.